Right.
Well, shall we?
Yes. Rob, hello!
Hi, Jonathan. You sounded a little bit like Marcus Brigstock doing an impression of Jeremy Vine then.
Oh, dear. Two people I'm not that keen on. I'm going to have a beer, Rob. What are you having?
I'm drinking cider. Weston's.
Oh, nice.
Weston's vintage cider.
I've got a beer that I've never tried before. I picked it up in the old supermarché. It was on offer. It's called Chameleonic. It's on a two-line break.
Oh, I see.
Quite a nice design. It's Magic. The Magic. I think you've had a beer from this lot before. The Magic.
Yeah, I think so.
Magic nice, Rock Brewing.
It's a nice can, that.
It's a DDH, whatever that stands for.
A DDH.
Is that a double dry hopped?
I don't know. It sounds like a 1960s pesticide.
Pour it into my veins. I'm so bad at pouring beer. You'd hate me. You.
Have you ever worked behind a bar? Your parents used to run a hotel, didn't they?
Yeah.
Well,
a Yorkshire head on it, isn't it?
Well, you know, let's not go too far, John.
We don't like froth down here.
No, I'd noticed that working in bars.
I like it, though. Must be my northern heritage.
Must be.
That's funky. Okay. It's been 6 months almost to the day since we recorded an episode. Yeah, it was December the 8th. It's now June the 13th.
So our first podcast of 2023.
I know. It's pathetic. Yes. But it's not been an easy time for either of us in terms of trying to find spare time. So
no, it's difficult.
I seem to have volunteered for every volunteer thing going for, you know, in a small community.
Are you a lifeboatman yet?
No,
inland lifeboat.
Luckily, we're not by the sea.
Stoking on the Bluebell Railway.
Oh, that would be next, would it? The Watercress line. Yeah, that would definitely be next.
I mean, I can see you in one of those little sort of black peaked caps.
Mm.
A shovel of coke in your hand.
Yeah. I should say welcome to North v South, the podcast that is and isn't about design. This is episode 114. Somehow we've sort of lurched, crept, or maybe even glacial-like movement towards an ever-increasing number. But
we kind of raced to 100, and then it's been sporadic since.
Yeah.
It's like we peaked.
Well, we met up last week, didn't we? And we hadn't seen each other for quite a while, maybe since last December it might have been. But anyway, we decided that we missed doing this, and so we thought we'd inflict you with that pleasure once again. If you've not listened to it before, we talk about what we've been up to, and then we go through some news, which is kind of design related in some way. We used to have a topic, but we don't do that anymore. We just don't get time to prep for it. So we just go, we then might do a website of the week, and then we eat a pie.
That's a very succinct description of the North VSF podcast, John.
Yeah, it's a kind of random chat around design, but we take in films and games and sort of pop culture stuff, books, sci-fi, all that kind of stuff that you might talk about in a design studio, which is what we talked about and how we met. If you can avoid the really bad music that people try to put on in studios generally, unless you're
really was a good bear of yours, wasn't it?
Unless you're in a cool trendy studio somewhere.
We should probably start one of the episodes with some cheering breaks just to make you really
no thanks
hark back to those days.
Well, why don't we kick off then? What have you been up to, Rob, in the last 6 months, or what is on your desk?
Well, Jonathan, I seem to have become, slightly accidentally, an artist for games, somehow. We've talked a lot about games. You're a player of games. I'm not a player of games anymore, but I'm kind of interested in the whole world of games. But, kind of gradually, more and more of my clients have become kind of indie game makers. So, I think, apart from a couple of book covers, nearly every single client I've had over the past 6 months have been game-related, from kind of Warhammer-esque sci-fi games that's in development to trick-making, trick-taking card games to kind of top trump style games, concept art for some video game stuff. Yeah, so that is basically what's on my desk. So at the minute I'm doing 4 covers for rule books for a tabletop role-playing game, which is nice because it's it takes in 60 years of space flight. So from the first kind of manned flight up into the near future, and beyond, I think, actually. So the covers are all sci-fi space helmets, which has been quite fun to draw. Working on a book cover for some interconnected sci-fi stories, which has been a nice little job. I'm just about to start on some box art for another tabletop game. Not entirely sure how that one works in terms of what the mechanics are with that one, but it should be a fun illustration job and kind of pretty much something I've not done before. It's kind of a more vibrant, playful illustrations, I think. Yeah, so a lot of illustrations for games going on. The big one, the kind of Warhammer-ish game, that's been this big ongoing thing for, I don't know how long, I must have been involved in that for 9 or 10 months now. Everything from kind of concept art, mechs and spaceships, to illustrative stuff for the rule books and law book. And now I'm working on some design-related stuff for the core rule book. Just nice working on all the different aspects of a game. Yeah, but I don't really know how it's happened. I guess, you know, if I follow game makers, they follow me and they see my work and that's how it happens. But it's all of a sudden, that's my client base, is indie game makers.
That's great, isn't it? I think there's a real... I mean, there obviously has been a growth and a sort of focus on RPGs, but I think there's quite a lot of systems out there that are like base games that people can build upon.
Yes.
And so therefore there's a huge proliferation and they all have similar needs and they're similarly narrative driven, which requires imagery to kind of illustrate how a particular scenario might play out or whatever, rather than Dungeons and Dragons, which is traditionally a very much table, role and stats based. This is much more like interactive fiction. And so therefore I think especially your style, which is kind of generally not sequential images, they're very much illustrative, you know, frozen points in time.
Yeah.
And I think they suit that kind of requirement really well, don't they? You know, individual weapon systems and spaceships and all that kind of iconography and just absolutely, I can see, you know, I don't even have to, I haven't seen any of the work that you produce. I guess it's all private, but I can, you know, imagine what the page layouts are like because it's very similar to a lot of Warhammer rule books are in the similar vein, aren't they?
Yeah. So it's similar in a lot of respects to the comics community. I think it's quite sort of supportive and encouraging, particularly to kind of small indie makers. And the games community seems, again, the same. You see a lot of people talking about each other's games and kind of sharing stuff that they like and sharing Kickstarters. And it just seems like a nice space to be in and be involved in. I've just been invited to join a Discord server for people involved in tabletop role-playing game making, which might result in me hopefully getting some more work, but will kind of hopefully immerse me a bit more in the kind of game sphere. Because, like I said, I'm not a player of games, but I do like the creativity and the enthusiasm and the inventiveness, I think, that's involved.
Yeah, I think this episode's probably going to be quite game heavy. But when we say games, yeah, it's almost like it is world building, is what you're doing in a lot of these games. And I think it is the sort of the merging of quite a lot of disparate creative processes, whether that's, you know, audio, illustration design, concept writing, you know, all those things all come together in games, where, you know, yeah. So there's a real sort of a meeting of lots of different creative output. And it's just, so I find it fascinating, you know, that people can, you know, how it all comes together. Is
yeah. Kind of I've been surprised by sort of reading about different games and backing a few on Kickstarter and stuff is how rich narratively some of these games are. You know, really deep, rich world building and a quite subtle kind of motivations for characters or character classes. And, you know, it's very different to the, you know, your kind of basic quest driven Dungeons and Dragons games that I used to play. You know, they're a lot more sophisticated these days. Which I kind of I didn't really know what to expect, but it surprised me and impressed me.
So that's taken up most of the last of the 6 months that we've...
It has, really.
And have you felt that you've been prolific, or have you struggled with it, or have you enjoyed that sort of that amount of work?
I think I'm getting more prolific. It's because I'm juggling several projects at a time. I think it takes a bit of getting used to, because now they're all illustrative projects, whereas I used to have kind of design stuff on, illustration stuff on my own things. Whereas really, for the last 6 months, I've just been jumping from one illustration project to the next. But I think I'm learning how to kind of make use of that. You know, you kind of focus on one thing for a while, and maybe you come up against a wall, so you hop to the next thing, and kind of keeps everything fresh. And maybe something you do in one project influences something you do in another, whether it's kind of the style or a technique that you use. So yeah, it's kind of coming together quite nicely. It's meant I haven't really done much personal work over the last 6 months.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to have to change, because one of the other things I've got on my desk is Thought Bubble, the comic art festival up in Harrogate in November. And I've got a table there. I had to apply for a table and got approved. So now I've got to, I've got a few months to produce some products to sell and get a banner made and, you know, all the stuff that comes with tabling at a Comic Con, essentially, so, which is really exciting. I've never even been to a Comic Con before, let alone tabled. So it's going to be very new. But it's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. But it just means I've got to kind of somehow balance the client work with getting ready for Thought Bubble. And the getting ready for Thought Bubble also involves, you know, finishing writing a book and, you know, stuff like that. So quite a lot to do.
So do you feel if we whiz, you know, turn back the time clock a year, do you feel that you've improved as an artist, or have you changed the way you work? Have you found that you've developed better ways of being able to deal with multiple strands, as it were? Or are you just too busy to think about that kind of thing?
Yeah. No, I think about it quite a lot. I think a year ago, I still felt like a bit of an imposter doing certain illustration projects or concept art. And I think in the last 4 or 5 months, I really feel like, you know, I'm a proper illustrator now. I feel like I've no qualms about telling people that's what I do for a living. And I guess part of that is just working with different clients on different projects, producing, you know, a variety of work. And I think constantly getting hired to do stuff and getting paid to do it just boosts your confidence. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you definitely sound buzzy. And your process is, so take us through, like, your working day, what do you, how do you start off? Do you have like a list, or do you just pick up the work that you started the day before, or do you work in random times during the day? How does
sometimes I try and work from 9-ish and usually finish at 6 or 7. But I tend to, if I, sometimes I'll have something on my desk and I'll leave it the night before, and I'll leave it specifically so I can pick that up in the morning. It might be, you know, drawing on a pad, or actually digitally drawing on my iPad, but I'll have that in the middle of my desk so I know that that's the next thing I need to do. And I tend to manage my work through Dropbox paper, where I have a work list, which is, you know, essentially just bullet points of the work I've got to do, linking to more descriptive text of kind of exactly where I'm at in a project, and it'll have the stages. So, you know, sketches have been emailed, sketches have been approved, deposits paid, balance paid, you know, just so I can keep track of everything. But I also put a work list on my desktop background on my computer so that it's there all the time, and I update that every few days, so that, because I haven't got any flat surfaces in my studio because I'm up in the pitched roof. And if I did have a flat surface, I'd have a clipboard with a list on it that I could kind of tick things off. So I have that on my computer instead. Right. Just like a constant reminder.
As a static image.
Yeah. And I just, it's basically just kind of like a reminder, so I don't forget about a project for more than a couple of days.
Yeah, fair enough. Whatever works.
You know, and, you know, the more detailed stuff is Dropbox paper.
Have they made any changes to that app? I haven't seen anything. I haven't used it for a long time.
I don't think so.
No.
No. Okay. It works fine.
Yeah.
It does exactly what I need it to do. So, yeah, so I think really the rest of the summer is going to be this balance of client work and preparing for Thought Bubble.
So anything you want to talk about producing for Thought Bubble? Is that going to be...
Well, the main, I'm going to get my book reprinted, The Weirdfield World. So I've got a couple of amends to make on that, because, you know, I don't know, people who've proofread that were terrible. And then Innsmouth. So I want to get at least the first section of Innsmouth. He has printed his little book, maybe the first two chapters, just as little A4 bounding craft paper card, little booklets to sell. And then I'm going to have prints and stickers, badges, you know, as much kit as I can rustle up, really. Mm-hmm. And then you just got to kind of hope that you get enough people there that want to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not having done a con before, I haven't really got much of an idea of what to expect in terms of sales. And it also, it's been my first time kind of outside of a social media bubble. You know, it's a real echo chamber, isn't it? Because I talk to people about my work that are on social media following me because of my work. So it'll be interesting to see if I get many customers at Thought Bubble who didn't previously know me.
Mm.
You know, if they just kind of come past my stand and have a look and think, oh, that looks interesting, I'll spend a tenner on that or whatever.
Mm.
Yeah, so if our listeners have got any tips for exhibiting at Thought Bubble or a Comic Con for a newbie like me, then write in. Answers on a postcard, please.
Oh, it sounds like things are ticking along very nicely for you.
Yeah. It's going all right.
Good stuff.
All right. What about you?
Well, I've been doing some design work again, like really grunty stuff. I've been working for the BBC, on a Top Gear live event. It's for their print magazine, which has been an interesting reintroduction to multi-client approval processes.
Yeah. Did you have to sign in, do all the sign-in stuff as a BBC-approved supplier, no. or have you managed to avoid that?
No, because I'm working for a third-party publisher who publish their
Believe
magazines.
Believe me, that's good.
But
it's
even
like a
so,
Kafka-esque
it's
nightmare.
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah, even so, it's tricky. But I've had access to their. They've got this image library system called Elvis, which is really amazing. You know, you can. I've only got access to the Top Gear magazine, and I'm not actually that interested in. I have no interest in cars. I'm probably
not
the worst. No. I couldn't be the worst designer they have chose to do all this work. But yeah, and it's been quite interesting, you know, being able to access all of their assets. Because it's like literally every single InDesign page you can download as a package from going all the way back into the 10, 15 years or whatever. So that's been challenging and a real design compromise, because obviously it's going through a chain of command in one company, and then it goes to the BBC and comes back, and then there's other people getting involved or producing their own stuff without anybody knowing and chucking that into the mix. So it's the typical kind of maelstrom of input after a job has been started. So that was meant to be 2 weeks in February, and it's still going. That has involved PowerPoint. I've become some kind of a PowerPoint guru, and that's been painful. I've been doing some PowerPoint stuff for another company. It's not something I want to get involved in, but you know, it's paying the bills, and that has been just creating like a branded PowerPoint system for them. Like a sort of a whole set of templates that they can use for not only sales, but they want to do, you know, they're almost like a little mini publishing system. So that's been, you know, I've learned quite a lot about.
Yeah, I bet you have.
Just the frustration of PowerPoint is so limiting. So, yeah, I've been doing that. I've actually ended up with a really weird working process, which is quite long-winded, but I design everything in Illustrator, and then I copy and paste it into Keynote because that retains vector graphics. And then I paste it into PowerPoint. So I take a screen grab of the Illustrator file, put it into PowerPoint, and then manually move everything. Because otherwise you're just in a world of hell. And that actually works out quicker than trying to work natively in PowerPoint. I'm sure there'll be lots of listeners. Oh, yeah, about three or four listeners. But, you know, of having to go through this pain, but also I don't know whether they've reached that same process of just keep as light a touch inside PowerPoint as possible.
Oh, God, yeah. I used to have to do it when I worked at a pharmaceuticals marketing agency. I used to have to do presentations for client stuff, and God, it was horrific. But yeah, you do as little as you can. I used to do all my the graphics in Illustrator as well.
Yeah, I haven't been having talking of Illustrator and Photoshop. I've been having so many issues with my Mac. It's not an old Mac. It's an iMac 27 inch. It's 4 years old. So it was the last of the really good ones. It's an i7, I think, or maybe even an i9. It's super powerful. It just keeps shutting down. I just keep getting, I probably get two or three kernel panics a day as soon as I open any kind of Adobe applications. In fact, today, though, it was Twitter app doing it. And I can't even watch video in Twitter now, it just flickers and everything. So I've got a doubt. I think maybe I've gotten some memory issues or something like that with this Mac.
I replaced mine just recently because mine was just taking forever to open anything. You know, like minutes and minutes to open a document and minutes to save something. Even to open a save dialog box was taking 2 or 3 minutes. So I got myself a Mac Mini.
Like the studio, or is it?
It's just the Mac Mini, but with a high end, what's it got? An M2 Pro in it.
Right.
And it's great. And it's, you know, it's got an SSD drive and it's lightning quick compared to my old one.
Hey, so if you got the studio screen, then is that what it's called?
The studio display. Not the XTP Pro, you know, 8K thing.
But it's still a few bob, right?
It was 1,500 quid.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. This thing works absolutely fine. It's fine. I just need to, I think I need to do wipe it and start again. But yeah, it's been painful. So what else have I been doing? Oh yeah, so boring. PowerPoint templates, eh? I've got a website and I haven't built a website for quite a few years. When was lockdown? 2021. That's the last time I built a website. I just haven't had any of that working. So I've got one now. So it's quite interesting seeing how technology just so rapidly moves on. It's insane.
I think that's why I just absolutely refuse to get involved in web design. It's just moving so quick. Yeah. I thought, well, there's no chance.
Yeah, I mean, I was using Adobe XD, which is a kind of like a Keynote on steroids, really. It's kind of, you can create interactive prototypes on it. And there's another app called Figma. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah.
So they've been bought by Adobe, and there's a whole debate whether it's going to be rolled into the Creative Suite or not.
Of course it will.
So they're killing off XD. I really like that app. I just felt really comfortable in it because it's very similar to Illustrator.
Yeah.
But it's got sort of specifics for web. And sharing designs with clients is really good in it as well. So I've had to, so I thought, well, I better take the plunge and go over to Figma. So I've been doing a few designs in that. And it's an interesting app because it's, you can use the web page. So you could design inside an iPad if you wanted to. But obviously there is a native app on Mac and Windows.
Right.
But it's essentially, it seems like a window straight through to the web experience.
Okay.
But it's very responsive and quick, and there's no save in it because it automatically, every time you save it, it's on the cloud immediately. Which means that, sending a prototype to a client is live and you can make changes as they watch it, which is pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
But there are lots of weird quirks and limitations about it. Yeah, so it's been an interesting learning curve sort of building in it.
Sorry, was it originally designed as a professional tool, or is it one of these consumer things that's become more and more potent as it's been developed?
No, I think it's definitely been definitely a professional tool.
Okay.
They've got another, I can't remember what they call it. They've got another, I think they call it Fig Jam or something like that. It's it's like a thought, one of those mind mapping kind of, I can't remember what it was, Omni Outline or Omni Graph or whatever it was called back in the day. It's very similar to that.
Do you know what? I've actually used that with a client based in Switzerland. I hated every moment of using it.
I think I was thinking about it today because it creates this, by its very nature, it forces design systems onto you. So it's very much like it's used by people who build big design systems for banks and Google Material and all those kind of big schemes, but for the single designer working out of their spare room or whatever, there's lots of 80% of it is fluff, you're never going to use it. But it does force you into this kind of modal way of designing, where all your gaps are, all your spaces are even, everything's set in a certain way, so everything. This is why everything looks the same. And it's very hard for you to lay out. Well, I guess you could, but it wants you to lay out in this kind of very logical, methodical, kind of rhythmic way. So I think if you wanted to do anything that was remotely kind of art directed or groundbreaking or interesting, you'd really be better off designing in InDesign or Illustrator because it's
Dreamweaver
because it takes your hands off the wheel. It stops trying to lead you into stacking everything in boxes or stacking them side by side. So if you wanted to auto lay out a series of boxes that were stepped going down across a page rather than just either aligned to the top or underneath each other. It's impossible to do because it wants to regiment everything into straight lines.
You make it sound like that sort of that element of Word, Microsoft Word, where you put a picture box in and then you move it, a millimeter to the left of your formatting for the previous 16 pages. Screwed.
Oh, it is very much like that. In fact, it reminds me of Freehand and Quark in a lot of ways. It's got these kind of embedded tools. So if you want to scale anything, you've got to switch to a different tool set scale something. It's weird. It's definitely been a learning curve. And obviously, as I get older, learning new things is harder and harder and harder. So anyway, I've been doing that, and it's a very dry financial website. But I've actually, for the first time in a long, I'd say at least 3 or 4 years, I've actually been enjoying doing the kind of design stuff. I've also been working on some live event graphics, you know, just my old sort of school of creating signage for events. And that was just so easy. And so I enjoyed it so much. I could just get into the zone. And
there is a lot to be said about the zone.
Yeah.
And just, well, I used to work.
I wasn't really wasn't making any effort. I was just, making sure everything was right, high res, sending it off to the printers, getting back approval. It was nice, and knowing that I was going to get £200 or £300 at the end of the day. I was like, this is all right.
It's nice, isn't it, where you can just kind of focus on almost like a process. And you haven't got kind of inner battles about creativity or anything else.
Is this the right thing I'm doing? Trying to craft an email. I mean, I think a lot of designers don't have that pain of having to deal directly with clients. The politics of a middle person, which is makes it 100 times worse.
Yeah, I think I'm lucky in that I very rarely deal with a middle person. I'm dealing direct usually with indie creators or authors or whatever, and that's a nice thing, not having to work through account managers.
Well, they're getting teams. That kind of that endorphin of you being able to visualize exactly what's in their head, they can, and them trying to because they're creative or writers or whatever, they can express generally what it is they want. Or at least kind of nudge you in the right way. And then they rely on your creativity to sort of fill that hole. Whereas most design work is not like that at all. It's like such an undefined brief in the first place that you're kind of like, you're beholden to so many things that might change in between you sending the work or presenting the work and it coming back with feedback. It's a bum hole.
Yeah. Speaking of emails,
design is a bumhole. That's my.
That's your new book.
Yeah.
Speaking of emails, how do you sign off your emails?
Kiss.
You do not.
What do you mean? Kind regards.
What's your sign? Are you a kind regards?
Why is that bad?
I don't know. I always just write cheers.
Really? Fuck it hell.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter who I'm talking to. Cheers, Rob. I sometimes wonder, is that too informal? And I think, I'm quite happy to write an email as if I'm talking to the person.
Love you, bye.
So, I don't go that far, except with my emails to you, John.
Kind regards, I think.
Okay.
As well, so.
It's a bit stuffy.
Is it?
Public school.
Yeah, well, I am a PSW. Yeah, so that's been that. I've been working on, is this still interesting? I don't know.
Yes.
I haven't done a huge amount of work and stuff. I mean, I've quite involved in a lot of volunteer stuff at the moment. I went to the pub, and when I came home, it turned out that I was now involved in starting a new pack for the local Cubs. Scout Cubs.
How many pints in?
It was about four, I think. Yeah.
Four pints, and you're now a Cub leader.
Yeah. And I feel like I've been invested into a cult. I mean, I don't even like the Cubs.
That seems a little harsh. It can't all be that bad.
Yeah, so that's
we have discussed about you using your newfound influence, haven't we? Because I'm still on the waiting list for Cubs. They said I'd be in at Christmas, but that was 1979.
I think there was
a woggle shortage back in the late 70s, the winter of discontent. I think that's how it all started.
Yeah, that's very weird. And we've been having, I've been involved in Ofsted at my local primary school. So that's been full on. That was in January, February.
I bet. Just going back to the Cubs, John. Have you got a name in the Cubs? Are you Arcala?
Yeah, unfortunately, we do. Because there was the choice. It's they're trying to modernise it as best they can. The problem with modernising the Cubs or the Scouts, is that most of the leaders in it, as they're called, are ancient beyond, you know, and very much old fashioned.
Is it essentially a paramilitary group?
Well, that's what I think it is. Yeah, there's some very weird left-handed handshakes. I'm called Hathi or Hearty. I'm the elephant from, you know, Jungle Book, the Colonel. Yeah. And I chose that because my surname is Elliman. But it seems a bit weird. You can just choose your names. And I thought, well, why can't we go modern and just be our names? It's silly. Yeah. There we go. I don't know. But it's only, you know, they're like eight and 10 year olds, eight to 10. So they're all still little kiddie.
I'm slightly concerned most of them are taller than you, John.
Yeah. Not as angry as me, though.
No. Give them a couple of years under your tutorship.
Yeah, I know. Quite harsh. Yeah.
You've got your badge for anger management.
Oh, I've got quite a few badges. What else? Oh, no. So I've been working on my my higgledy-piggledy stuff since March. But because I've been working on other stuff, it's sort of taken a back seat a bit. So I started with I did a map in to try and get my eye back in. And
your map was bloody brilliant.
Oh, thanks.
Really, really nice.
But I've been sort of generating place names, working with language, creating all sorts of world building stuff. And I've written quite a lot of things, but I still in the kind of not kind of found a style or a kind of a proper fit for the world. So I've decided just to create, or I'm just building a world, lots of little legends and stories, and then use those to sort of to create some drawings.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah.
When you talk about generating names, have you got like a system or a theme?
My theme is Anglo-Saxon. So I want it to be rooted in Great Britain. And I think that there's this weird, you know, there's lots of, there's Norse sagas, there's Roman stories, there's Norman and medieval stories. But there was a whole swathe of culture after the Norman invasion that just got wiped out. So there's no real mythology about Anglo-Saxons left, apart from maybe Beowulf.
I was gonna say, what's left? Beowulf, yeah.
So all of that background has gone, and some of it's in, you know, very misty kind of folklore traditions. Mm. So I thought that was a really good start to build a kind of world that the Higgles and Piggles live in. Not that they're going to be in Great Britain, but I just think it's a nice generator of ideas, because I'm not stealing existing ideas. I'm just using it really to guide it. So I found I've got an Anglo-Saxon dictionary. There's a really good online one as well. And then I've just been taking root names and playing with them, really. You can do it. I mean, if I'd have had this at university, I might have got a decent degree. But no, the computer, you know, like just the being able to search the roots of language and words and where they came from and where, you know, what literature they've been found in is just insane. I've been on the British Museum website today just looking at artifacts, you know, with tiny little brooches, and there's six photos of them, and you can, you know, you can read about who they belong to, what they think they're made of, and all in super mega high res. It's just
fantastic.
It's insane, isn't it? I just blows my mind. Yeah. I know we've had the internet for a very long time, but when you're doing like real proper deep research into stuff, you can just get lost for hours and hours and hours. So yeah, so I've been slowly building that. So the idea is I'm creating like a website that's a resource for higgledy-piggledy for kids to go on and read stories and stuff. But there's also there's this thing called the Moorbeam Institute, which is this fake institute that was set up in the turn of the century that was researching these stories, and it got wiped out in a Second World War bombing raid in Putney, where their headquarters were, and they lost all the stuff. But there's this one book that's been left, and it's been found in a secondhand shop in Alton near me, a little market town.
That's fantastic.
There's that backstory. I mean, which, you know, I'd never foist that onto kids, but I just like the fact that there is a backstory, and I started writing all these things. So I found there was this, amazing. I've been looking at like bombing raids in the Second World War. And there was this milk bar in Putney. I don't know if you know Putney, but where the bridge is, right at the end there, where the high street ends, there was a big milk bar and Dance Club. And
okay.
Two Fokker Wolfs in 1943, I think it was, they were trying to destroy, they think they were trying to destroy bridges along the Thames, and they obviously became lost, but one of them got shot down, and the other one just obviously decided he wanted to, he dive bombed Putney. Like the bridge, but he missed it, and the bomb went straight through into this milk bar and thing and killed a lot of people. And so that's the sort of start of my, it was just unbelievable, a dive bombing Fokker Wolf. It's just so random, isn't it, life?
Yeah.
But it was very, you know, it was obviously after the Blitz and in between, before the V2 start and V1 started coming down on London. But just there's so many stories out there that you can riff on and find out information about. Fantastic. Yeah. Anyway, so
I found similar things researching stuff for Innsmouth. Talking about names, the vast majority of the names for the characters in Innsmouth, or for kind of background characters, come either from the people that were on the Mayflower, or the first settlers for Jamestown in Virginia. I just thought the names kind of sound kind of anachronistic, you know, because Innsmouth is vaguely sort of 1920s-ish, 1930, but it kind of feels older. Mm-hmm. And I wanted something that was kind of very much of New England. So I thought that was a kind of an appropriate thing. But so that's kind of where I've got the names from. But then looking up things like lighthouse disasters and famous shipwrecks or ghost ships and things, and you end up kind of going down rabbit hole after rabbit hole, don't you, when you're doing these things. It's like mentions some captain, and then you read into him, and it's his grandfather was on the, I don't know, shipwrecked off Nantucket, and all of a sudden you, I don't know, you're 500 years earlier and you don't know where you started. But it's fascinating. The research
it
is
really
great.
Is, yeah.
It's one of the best bits about writing.
I tell you, a game that you should look at, a video game, I think you can get it on Mac. It's called Return of the Obra Dinn, and it's set on a ship that is like a ghost ship that's been found, and you are an insurance evaluator, and you've got to work out what's happened to the crew. And it's kind of black and white 3D. It's really hard to explain, but you've got this weird watch, and you find a dead body, you can open the watch, and it takes you back in time to the moment of their death. And you've got the log book of the ship. So it's set in 18, I don't know, I'm going to get this wrong, but like 18, let's say 50, something like that.
Yeah.
And you then sort of can go through the log book and try and work out which name of the person, what the name of the person was who's died, who was there at the time. And you have to kind of link all these things together.
That's really nice.
So you only access the next bit of time by going through all these weird...
people who make games are very smart.
It's one guy doing this. Anyway, what I was saying was that his names in it are like the Innsmouth kind of names. They're just, I wonder whether he went through the same kind of process.
Maybe. Did you see, you know, I know you're not on social media much.
I'm all over it. I just never post.
There was a thing... that was doing going around social media recently, and it is a list of names of Quakers.
Well, you know, the Elements were Quakers.
Were they?
We were Quakers.
I was brought up in a Quaker village.
Yeah, you were, weren't you?
In New York. So some of these Quaker names, they were 17th and 18th century Quaker names. Doesn't say anything more than that. Hallelujah Fisher, Returned Elgar, Reuben Rawbone.
I think I had that in a restaurant.
These are just great. Sentence Grimes, Temperance Poor.
Amazing.
I mean, they're just fantastic, aren't they? Elizabeth Special, Ermine Prickett.
That is amazing. I love the name. We did actually think of, for my daughter, the name Lettuce. I just love the old Lettuce with an I. Is a, that's an old Quaker name, isn't it?
No lettuces here. Silence Williams. Plant Fry, Grey Poop. There you go.
My Mac's doing that. Like all its fans have suddenly gone up.
Oh, is it? That's what mine used to do, particularly with Safari opened. But
it's Chrome seems better. I've got open. Anyway. Yeah, so we've been going on and on, haven't we? We've been speaking.
No, that's good. Just one other thing while we're talking kind of Innsmouth-y stuff and what's on our desk. This arrived in the post today. I'm holding this up to the camera for John to look at.
The Mountains of Madness.
It's a graphic novel.
Right.
Of Lovecraft's Mountains of Madness. I haven't read it yet. It arrived this morning. Adam Fider. I think it's a Polish illustrator. Published by Blue Fox Comics. And it looks lovely. It's really quite, it's not kind of out and out comic art. It's kind of quite arty, sort of quite fluid, very colourful.
It looks like really nice. Kind of video game box art.
I love
it. It's got that sort of painterly feel to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks really nice.
I don't know that story. Which one's that?
I don't know either.
Oh, right.
I've got all this stuff based on Lovecraft, and I've never read any Lovecraft.
He's
problematic.
Yeah, I enjoy some of it, but I'd rather read Innsmouth.
Yes, thank you.
What about media, Rob? Media.
Media. So I've been watching Silo.
Right.
You haven't got Apple.
No, what's Silo? Some kind of.
It's got the kind of classic. Well-trodden dystopian sci-fi, 10,000 people living in a silo underground after some awful apocalyptic event above ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite tired and a bit boring in that sense, but the writing and the acting and the cast just elevate it to something that's well worth watching. And it's turned it into kind of a mystery thriller, and it stars Rebecca Ferguson. But it's really good. There was one bit where they talk about they've got like one screen that they can see outside, and they talk about the points of light in the sky, and they talk about wondering what they are. But yet they're in a silo with quite modern technology. And I was thinking, regardless of what happened apocalyptically, the fact that stars exist would not be lost. When you've still got a great big diesel generator humming away in the basement. So that kind of took me out of things a little bit. I thought that was misjudged, but it's good. Worth a look.
I was saying that it reminded me of a 19 kind of 20s or 30s book that I'd read as a kid. And I've just looked at it. It's The Machine Stops by E.M. Forster, about mankind dwelling underground. They've abandoned public discourse, and they just stay in their own rooms and interact via technology. That's quite prescient, wasn't it?
Yeah, sure. That's not an excerpt from Apple's latest press release.
No, it was when was it written? 1909.
I didn't realise he wrote anything kind of vaguely science fictiony.
Hmm?
What did they used to call science fiction before science fiction?
I don't know.
Speculative fiction.
Was it?
Was that it? Or is that a more modern term?
I don't know. I haven't got a clue. Mm. You're cleverer than me at that.
What else are you get out?
I've watched Yellow Jacket, which is a thing on, it's on Now or Sky or it might be HBO. Can't remember. It is a horror kind of drama about a girl, a female football team. In their last year at high school, they go on an aeroplane to play in a tournament up in Seattle or somewhere like that. Anyway, the plane crashes in the middle of nowhere, and the story cuts from that point to the future where they're grown up and they've got kids, they're in their, I'd say, early 40s, and it kind of flashbacks to a time when they. Had gone a little bit Lord of the Flies. Let's just put it like that. So it's got really great premise, but it cuts too much. So it makes it really, really annoying in that kind of, do you remember watching Lost where you're like two steps forwards, three steps back. And there were some great shocks in it, some really good actors. It was meh. But I think apparently season two is a big improvement on that. I think they move the story on a bit more. It's an interesting premise and well made. Yeah.
I think one of the problems I have with a lot of media, whether it's comics or TV shows or whatever, is quite often there's an amazing idea, a brilliant setup and a brilliant premise, but they're not necessarily enough there to justify how drawn out.
Yeah, it's a movie. You know, it should be a movie, not a 3.5 hour movie. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. It must be very, very hard. The commitment to these kind of programs is pretty massive. One TV program that is out was out a couple of weeks ago called Poker Face, which I have been enjoying. I've actually been watching it with Mawav, and that is that's very different because that is almost that's taken it. That whole process and gone back to the sort of 1970s type TV, where
really old-fashioned,
episodic, but self-contained,
with that kind of clever modern twist.
It's really, really well made. I found it frustrating in the opposite way, in the fact that her character is so fascinating, but she doesn't progress as a character. But the premise of this, if nobody's watched it yet, but it's the premise is this lady is on the run after a poker game incident, and she's got this amazing ability that she can tell if somebody's telling a lie, and every episode is set in a different place and there's a different murder that happens and she solves the murder. Or
it's great.
Yeah,
I really like it, and I love I've only watched the first couple, but I love that really old-fashioned idea of a different story, a different setting, different people every week. You know, it's like Columbo or...
Yeah, I wrote down... Rockford Files 23.
Exactly. Great theme tune.
And it's got that kind of... It's got that sort of slightly saturated colour palette and sort of heavy 3D graphics. It's, you know, really heavy stuff. It's well worth checking out. And you don't have to... It's not a binging thing because...
No.
They're all self-contained, as it were.
Yeah, good.
Our family is trudging through the Marvel universe, and I'm finding it very, very tiresome. Although Miss Marvel was good.
Yeah, it's good for Miss Marvel.
But again, too many parts. I mean, it just it didn't need to be, we'll have 10 episodes. It just got a bit boring.
Quite interesting. When they started Disney Plus and saying they were going to do Marvel TV series, they were all like, you're not going to have to watch any of these to watch the films. It'll add stuff, but you don't need to have seen anything. And now they're very much, there's a new one coming out next month called Secret Invasion. And they're saying, oh, you've got to watch this because it sets up the next film.
Right.
So, it's, you know, they're very much changed their tune to try and get people to subscribe.
Well, when you go onto the Disney app, you can, we started the timeline, you know, right, this is how it should be watched. But we can't keep up with the fact that they're now inserting TV series in between the bits that we haven't watched, because some of it we can't watch with Kitty because it's not suitable for her, or it's so overwhelmingly especially the Avenger films are just so overwhelmingly confusing and garbled that it's impossible for her to focus on the story. I mean, not that they're great stories, but I'm yawning at it. I don't know why. It's like a it's like an itch. I can't stop. I want to watch them, but I haven't made it through all of the films. I just get so tired of it. But going to high art films, we did watch last week The Worst Person in the World, which is a Norwegian film. I hope it's Norwegian.
Okay.
And it's I'd say it's like Annie Hall. It's a focusing on the woman in a series of relationships across 4 years of her life. And it also involves the city, Oslo. It's beautifully made and amazingly well acted. And it's bittersweet and funny and sad. And it's just so human and such an antidote to the kind of, you know, the modern blockbuster film. It's a fantastic, brilliant film. I gave that one.
Blimey.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll look that one up.
Yeah.
I don't even think I'd heard of that.
Yeah, it's great. Reading anything at the moment, Rob?
No.
I'm reading a book that you'd like called Ridley Walker. It's by Russell Hoban, who was an American writer. He lived in London, and he was writing mainly in the 70s and 80s. I think he's passed away now. And I think he might have written some stuff for Doctor Who, but he wrote mainly children novels. And I'd say he's very much in the kind of, Alan Garner, Susan Cooper kind of style of writer. So quite mystical. And it's a book about, it's set in Kent, and it's set in the future. So there's been a war and civilization has been wiped out. And it's about a 12-year-old boy and him sort of coming of age. They all speak, the whole thing is written first person by him, and he speaks a kind of pidgin English that's kind of, you have to read the sentences a couple of times just to get over
how do
it.
You find that? I quite often struggle with that, you get into it really quickly
because the story is really compelling, and it's a story about memory and civilization. It's amazing. I'm really, really enjoying it. So that's Ridley Walker. It's a
cool.
I think it's a Penguin classic. That's it, really. I've got one bit of new tech.
Okay.
I bought a Steam Deck.
Oh,
do you know what that is?
I do know what a Steam Deck. I mean, just for a second I thought it was like a Colby trouser press.
Yeah, I've bought I like a crease on Mastara on my stay pressed.
No, I know what a Steam Deck is.
Yeah, so
I'm 50. I'm not 70.
So I used to love video games, but I hadn't played them for a very long time, and I was kind of curious about what they were like. Because I was using a PC and they had a game installed on it, and I was like, "Oh, yeah, this is good." Because let's face it, Mac is absolutely terrible at games. the last game that I had played all the way through, I was looking it up. It was Half-Life 1 on the PS2. So I was looked at the dates, and that was 2001. So that's the last. So anyway, I bought this because it was in the sale. It's brilliant.
So this is the Steam Deck is a standalone handheld console screen, all in one.
But yeah,
you can throw it to your telly to.
You can throw it to your telly or to your computer. So it's got a USB or an HDMI out. It's not a super high res screen on it, but my eyesight doesn't really pick up on that. And I don't have an HD telly, so it doesn't really matter. That's the only downside of it. Yeah, it's basically like Linux. It's running Linux over and running a sort of version of Windows in it. So basically most window games you can play on it. Imagine like holding a large PlayStation or Xbox controller with the screen in the middle. But then it's got these sort of two square, touch-sensitive squares on the left and the right, which acts as mice, so you can set them up.
Okay.
But you can customize, just absolutely everything on it. And you can download, because it's got a huge community on Steam, the app that runs on it. People have custom, setups for left-handed people, or, if you want to play with the sticks, or you want to play with the thumb, the interactive bits, you can change absolutely everything on it. And I've just found that I've been buying really old games and playing them and having a brilliant time. And, I haven't spent more than £10 on a game.
Yeah. Because I guess the new games are like 50, 60.
Yeah, they're 50, quid, 60 then. Quid. But they go on sale and you suddenly get like one with 85% off it. And you're just like, okay, I'll have that. So I've played, I've already finished four games on it. And, fully all the way through, and I'm playing a brilliant game at the moment that you would love, and I think you said you just bought it. It's called Disco Elysium.
I did, because it became on sale today.
Oh, was it on sale? Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
and that's just everything about games that I didn't realize existed anymore. I don't really like first person shooters and all that kind of stuff. I'm not fast enough or good enough at them, but give me a slow burning kind of RPG with like noir dystopia in it, and I'm all over it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing that.
Yeah, this is brilliant. I mean, even the soundtrack's cool. It's got this Sea Power, British Sea Power, as they used to be known. Yeah. It's really interesting. I'm having I'm having fun. I'm giving my I only play it like an hour a day or something like that. Not even that. But you can like turn it off and it remembers your game and starts up straight away again. And I've been playing.
That's a cool bit of kit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really cool. I think it was £300. So, and I haven't got a console, so I thought, well, go for it. Yeah, so that's that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Have you got a website of the week, Jonathan Ellerman?
I have. This was ages ago. It's from Present and Correct. It is called, I don't know, the website is called vgmaps.com. Really snappy. And it's a terrible website. But it's basically a collection of all video game maps with all the bits removed. So you can, adventure games, just millions and millions of games. Wow. But for design reference and inspiration, it's absolutely just a brilliant resource.
Spectrum, yeah, Jet Set Willy. Oh, my word.
I know. Sorry. You're going to get lost in there, aren't you?
Oh, dear God. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's great. Love that.
You got anything else to
I've got a website of the week.
Sorry. What is it?
It's called Brr. B-R-R.
Oh, really?
I like everything Antarctic and polar and Arctic. You know, these, books of adventure and exploration. Okay. And this is entirely more mundane. It's the blog of an IT guy who works at the US South Pole station. And it's basically him talking about kind of what life and work is like when you're working at the Admonson Scott Polar Research Station, about, you know, what happens when you have the last flight goes out, and when the coffee runs out, or when the milk runs out. It's really interesting. It's completely, you know, dull and mundane. There's nothing exciting about it, but it's a real insight to what it's like to live and work there.
Yeah, it's brilliant. That's so fascinating.
BRR.FYI.
The greenhouse has got a bit of Silent Runnings about it.
It is absolutely Silent Running. Yeah, apparently all they can grow is a few tomatoes and some herbs.
Right.
But it's great. Herbs. Really good herbs. Yes. Yes, exactly. Have you got a pie, Jonathan?
I have. I don't quite understand why it's called this. It's a summer Melton Mowbray pork pie.
Right.
From Waitrose and Partners, as they've added to their name now.
Mm-hmm.
This is geographic origin UK protected.
Oh, I see.
It's just a standard, bog standard, slightly, maybe like 9 centimetres.
I don't think we've measured pies.
No, we haven't, have we? It's slightly greasy bottom, but then a pork pie should really, shouldn't it?
It's nothing worse than a greasy bottom.
I know. It's a traditional. Shall I put some mustard on it? I'm going to go plain for now. So I'm looking at the jam. The jelly level.
Jelly content.
Bit disappointing, to be honest.
Is it? I've got tiny jelly.
What have you got?
I've got a pot pie from Robson's Butchers just down the road.
Ah.
It's got really good jelly.
Hmm.
How's your summer pot pie?
Really nice. Very peppery.
Yeah.
Good crunchy crust. Yeah, it's a decent porker.
Hmm.
How's yours?
It's good. It's particularly good. One, because it's got lots of good, sweet, salty jelly. Two, it's been out of the fridge for over an hour.
Yeah, and mine has too,
isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
I've got jelly now. I've hit a fine vein.
You've hit
of jelly
seam.
I'm going to go in.
The mother load.
Mmm. Jelly's the best bit.
It is. It's great, isn't it? Never trust anyone who doesn't like the jelly.
No, why? It's madness. Yeah, delicious. I'm going to give that a 7 out of 10.
I think mine gets an 8, John.
Oh. Can you hold it up so I can see it? Oh, it looks good. It's a bit very similar to mine.
Yeah. God, you've got a very angular bite.
I've activated the pooches now.
Have you? Oh, I see.
Yeah, they'll want a bit of this. Well.
Well, that was a joy, Jonathan.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I enjoyed that.
We witted on a bit.
We did.
So hopefully we've got some listeners left and that you enjoyed that or got some kind of use out of it, whether you were pumping iron at the gym or Or trimming,
what an awful thought.
Trimming your basil bush in the Antarctic.
Some people might use us as a soundtrack for their gym workouts.
Or making sweet, sweet love to your partner.
Oh, that's even worse.
While I chew on a bit of gristle.
And with that, dear listeners, we'll say goodnight.
Yeah. Bye.
We'll see you. We'll talk to you very soon.
Yeah. Take it easy.
Yeah. Let's do this again soon. Cheerio.
Good designing. Hello. That's my new catchphrase.
I think. I like it.
That's terrible.
Hello. What do you want to say?